a very gut level and a heart level that we can all understand, there's a tremendous stigma and there's a tremendous hatred and hypocrisy towards people in the sex trade. On a more complicated level, it's tied in very much to the laws that exist. It's tied into the laws around poverty. It's tied into laws around colonialism. Sex work laws historically have been used more than anything to control women, mostly working class women, who escaped from sort of patriarchal norms of what a good woman was.
Feminists, abolitionists call for the decriminalization of the industry all the time. What are they saying? They're saying that all women are exploited. They're looking at women who are working, saying, you have not chosen to work. You are exploited. They're on a crusade to save women, but they're in that, they're totally implementing a patriarchal structure of how they're going to do it. And it's ridiculous and absolutely ironic, and they don't realize
that we can play a role in transforming the conditions, that we have a part to play, just like marriage was transformed, just like civic rights were transformed for women. Well, so sex work can be transformed as well, and that we can remain sex workers and denounce violence.
That violence, we can choose that we will not have it anymore, that we will eliminate it, because we will eliminate criminalization, we will eliminate the attitudes and the hatred. We will take this violence seriously.
So we are fighting right now to define sexual services as work.
It is nice to block the doorway. It is nice to go to jail. There are nicer ways to do it, but the nice ways always fail. It isn't nice, it isn't nice. You told us once, you told us twice, but if that is freedom's price, we don't mind.
Welcome to Heating Up Radio, a look at the sex trade and its advocacy, a special documentary presentation of CKUT's long-term memory radio project.
My name is Brett Story.
It isn't nice. You told us once, you told us twice, but if that is freedom's price, we don't mind.
In February of 2003, the Coalition for the Rights of Sex Workers threw a week-long festival to celebrate the work and accomplishments of sex workers and their allies. Entitled Turn Up the Heat, the festival received a great deal of public attention, demonstrating to Montrealers just how empowered and organized sex workers often are. Sex workers, be they strippers, porn stars, or street workers, have been mobilized for decades, struggling to have their work recognized as work and to attain the rights and dignity they deserve. Every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. on CKUT's long-term memory radio, we will be exploring issues surrounding sex work, challenging popular stereotypes and the policies that uphold them, and providing a forum for those in the sex industry to define for themselves the main issues, problems, and goals. Today's episode, entitled Media Representation and Celebration, seeks to introduce listeners to issues surrounding sex work, as understood by those active in the trade and its advocacy. I spoke to three women, Lainey Bassman, Francine Tremblay, and Andrea Langlois, all of who participated in the Sex Work Festival and are involved in various aspects of sex work advocacy. In their own words, they offer perspective on the importance of self-representation as a component of self-determination. We spoke about such issues as decriminalization, women's sexuality, choice, and the struggle to change the status and stigma currently associated with sex work in Canada.
My name is Lainey Bassman, and I am a member of the Coalition for the Rights of Sex Workers, and have organized a few activities with them, but my biggest implication has been with this festival. For 2.5 years, I've been working at STELA, which is the Sex Workers' Rights Organization of Montreal, service and rights defense resource for sex workers by sex workers. And the Coalition is a collaboration of sex workers, friends, allies, people who support the cause of decriminalization and rights and respect and dignity for sex workers. We use the word sex work deliberately for a lot of reasons. One, just it does just the simple task of grouping together all sorts of activities, which are, you know, sexual services for remuneration, but are quite different one from the other. So the ones that I mentioned, dancing, escort, street prostitution, pornography, all sorts of things that have one thing in common, which is that they're services that are erotic in nature. Mm-hmm. We also use the word sex work because it removes this label or this stigma of whore, prostitute, hooker, all sorts of things that are very heavy social connotations and that weigh heavily on the shoulders of the people who wear them as a label for an entire identity and not a service that somebody might provide for a day, a year, or even a career, but nonetheless is their work, it's not who they are. So it really helps us fight that stigma to a certain extent. And another thing it does is it locates the kind of work that we're going to do. As we recognize sex work as work and not a pathology or a crime or an immoral act, we can start working on the conditions within which it happens. So try to make things safer for sex workers. Try to prevent violence, denounce violence, mm-hmm. as not part and parcel of the trade. And to generate dignified conditions for those who are working to help sex workers have safe and dignified work conditions.
Turn Up the Heat was the first event of its kind in Montreal. The festivities included panel discussions, workshops, an international film festival, a cabaret, an art exhibit, and a party, featuring sex workers from all over North America and even Ecuador. I asked Lainey, as a member of the Coalition for the Rights of Sex Workers, why the Coalition decided to host such an event and what it hoped to achieve.
No, we wanted to be able to discuss things in ways that we wanted to propose, you know, with our own panelists and our own, you know, speakers and topics. So we got a chance to do that and invite the public in, to invite them into our discussions and to our ways of thinking and talking about these issues, which was great. I mean, in part it was to help sex workers learn a little bit more about, you know, things that they can do, like the workshop on Know Your Rights or the workshop on how to start up an internet porn site. And in part it was to open up to the community about these issues and you know, the film festival, just to have a look at what's going on around the world, that this isn't just a little pocket in the Centre Sud that we're talking about. We're talking about not just all of Montreal, not just all of Canada, but in the entire world. There are the same things coming up. And so we know we're not alone in this. We're not, you know, we haven't lost it. We're part of a larger movement.
My name is Andrea Langlois. I'm a graduate student at Concordia University, and I'm doing research with a research team around sex work, and my role is to do an analysis of media coverage of sex work. I see myself as someone who is involved in various social movements, but who is an ally to sex work advocates. Most media discourse around prostitution you're not talking about a person who has a job. You're not saying, like, I say I'm a writer. I'm a writer for my job, but that's not my entire personality. Mm-hmm. Once someone is labeled prostitute in the media, they become nothing but that.
It's an identity.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's, like, I think even if you looked at the case in Vancouver, like, there's another something else that comes up. There's this whole disposable lives kind of frame where women who are, you know, Aboriginal, addicted to drugs, living on the downtown east side of Vancouver. Obviously, the fact that so many women have been killed without anything being done about it shows that these lives are considered disposable, you know, and I think the media reinforces that. Mm-hmm. I think that the whore stigma in our society, has women who do sex work at the bottom and right. women of color who do sex work even lower, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like these lives are worth nothing, and mm-hmm. I think the reason I am involved at all in advocacy work around sex work is because I believe until we can gain respect for all women, you know, but unless us as women can see that we're not so different from mm-hmm. a sex worker, until we have respect for people who do sex work, until we work to create better conditions, like no mm-hmm. woman is ever gonna be free or emancipated, mm-hmm. which is, you know, like very loaded language, but
right.
I think that, I don't know, I think it's necessary. I think that it's so connected to everything.
Mainstream media, what are the dominant trends in how it portrays sex workers?
Well, we've seen good coverage with the Sex Workers Festival, which has been nice, but in Montreal, from what I see, there are basic kinds of news stories that come out. There's the victim, there's the deviant, the way this is the way we talk about sex workers. it's something that occurs so much in the media. You would think that all sex workers are drug addicts, that they live that they work around Centre Sud area, and that they are attached to gangs, which is, none of those are necessarily quote unquote true.
Mm-hmm.
Sex work is often used in the media as to describe an area. You know, like if you say there's prostitution in an area, it's supposed to give like a certain mental image of what that area must be like. And I always find this very strange, that it's like a descriptive term, mm-hmm. in some senses. Like it's like there's drugs and it's like, but, or there's sex work in this area, there's prostitutes hanging out on the street, and that means something. And I don't know what that means really. Like, I've never met a sex worker that scared me.
The festival itself attracted a great deal of local media attention, much of it well received by organizers, including articles in La Presse, The Gazette, and The Mirror. I asked Andrea what relationship this particular coverage has with media discourse on sex work generally, and how organizers sought to represent the movement through the media that covered festival events.
I was ecstatic. I think this got extremely good media coverage, but I think there's a difference between holding a festival, holding a press conference, and having someone write an article about a bad incident in the Centre Sud. But the thing is, too, that the women, which I believe it was all women who did the press conference, are smart. They're not stupid. They understand, you know, you don't need to do the research that I'm doing to understand, like, what bad media coverage is and what you don't want to say to the media around sex work, what you don't want to reinforce. It's like, you know it. And they were very clear, I believe, with the media that they were there. We're celebrating a movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to talk about violence, come to one of the panels. They would say, yes, there is violence, but we're going to talk about the extreme organizing that's happened. Yes, we are for decriminalization, but we're not going to talk about that in this press conference. This press conference is about the fact that we're having a festival.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about, yeah, we acknowledge all of that, and it's important to acknowledge, but that's not what you're here for.
It is debatable whether or not the media only represents popular opinions or whether it shapes and reinforces public attitudes. Regardless, the representation of the sex industry by both the state and its mainstream media certainly succeed in undermining the legitimacy of the work in the eyes of most citizens. Sex work organizers realize that attaining rights as income earners and as legal citizens is part and parcel of transforming the stigma attached to sex workers by media, policymakers, and members of the public generally.
Okay, Françoise Tremblay, PhD candidate at LUCAM in sociology. My thesis project, it's not final, but the title is Feminist and Sex Workers Making Sense of Prostitution. And also, I am a part-time teacher at Concordia University in sociology, and I do some activist work with Stella. I wrote my master thesis on individuality and modernity, and my last chapter, I build an argument for the decriminalization of prostitution. The first 130 pages were really written in order for me to have a say in these last 20 pages. Why is it important? It's probably because it's part of my own battle to be recognized as someone who has worked. And it didn't take me long to realize what the sex workers were fighting, the right to be. It's simple as that for me. It's the right to be, nothing else.
And you don't think they have the right to be?
They don't. They're all sorts of things, except being. What I found interesting in the beginning of my reading is prostitution are word that immediately set the tone. They're loaded. A prostitute. Are you? No, you're nothing. You're nothing. You're that thing that transgresses everything. You're a whore. You are totally immoral. Indecent. The slut, la pute, la salope. The bottom line of citizenship, the first level of definition is the easiest one. You pay tax, you're a citizen. This is as, you know, simple as you can get. And what is one of the arguments about sex workers? Well, they're not citizens, they're not paying tax, so let them be beat up. It's as simple as that. Why should I pay for their protection? And you hear people say that. Why? Because they don't pay tax. I think I'm a citizen, but if you don't think I'm a citizen, what am I supposed to do? I'm fighting to become a citizen. And at the level of work, what is work? So we are fighting right now to define sexual services as work. This is work, okay? You have a box where it's written work on it. It's filled with all sorts of different form of work. Here is sex services that is at wants to go in that box to have the legitimate label, I am work. Same as citizenship. Citizenship is a box that is defined. And I'm talking about like a concept is defined. We're knocking at the door, I am a citizen. I want to be a citizen. So citizenship and work are two form of legitimacy that we're trying to penetrate. Feminist movement, we're knocking on the door. Citizenship, we're knocking on the door. The work, we're knocking on the door. So we're pretty busy knocking on doors.
Yeah.
Can we enter? What enervates you so much about sex work?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
While selling sexual services is not itself illegal, sex work is severely restricted by criminal code regulations on activities surrounding the trade. The criminalization of these activities is a form of state oppression with serious consequences for sex workers seeking to better the conditions of their work. Many sex workers and advocacy groups seek decriminalization of the industry, but view legalization with deep concern. I asked my guests what the differences between the two forms of legal change are and why many sex worker organizations advocate decriminalization.
At Stella and the Coalition both advocate the decriminalization of sex work, which means the removal of the criminal laws which presently mention prostitution. So there's living off the avails, there's being found in or operating a common body house, there's communicating for the purposes of prostitution, there's transporting somebody to, etc., etc. And all of these things make it practically impossible to work without hitting up against the law somewhere and give the authorities the control and the discretion to use the laws where they want to control sex workers. We find these laws not only not helpful for anybody, specifically harmful for sex workers in terms of putting them in situations of violence and vulnerability to violence, and also in terms of just justice. It's how do we... why do we allow ourselves to control these kinds of transactions? In plain justice terms of justice, they're out of sorts with the other criminal laws that we have. We would want them removed in order to let sex workers organize their work as work, where they're treated like other workers who have specific conditions, with specific services, and therefore specific rules and regulations that will apply. Legalization usually means maintaining the criminal code as it is, but setting up limited ways within which sex workers can work legally. So it's a way of saying it's a necessary evil. These laws aren't eliminating prostitution, so let's try to control it so it doesn't disrupt too much. And pretend sometimes to want to help the women working. So usually it's brothels, legal brothels, or specific zones set up. But if you go outside of those zones, then you're still criminalized. You're still, and sometimes doubly so because you're doing it without a license, you know, now. Legalized systems usually reproduce some of the same stigmas about sex workers that criminalization that we see right now, which is that they're vectors for sexually transmitted disease more than other sexually active members of the population, and as such they have to be given medical testing every month, as opposed to just passing safe sex messages to both sex workers and clients and sexually active people. I just saw a documentary about a brothel in Nevada in the course of this festival where they wouldn't let women who are working in the brothels outside in the desert, wouldn't let them have car keys. For whatever reason, they had to hand over their car keys to the establishment. They're infantilized as, you know, needing these special rules and special laws to control their movement and their relationships with people. And so that's why, generally, we tend to be against what's seen as legalizing.
A society, for me, is made of strong individuals. If they want to help, if they really mean to help these people, they will give them room to breathe, to become to be. One argument about becoming a self is through your action, through your decision, through, you know, that sense that you're capable of doing something. Some people are born in situation that they're trying to either get out of or stay in, or they're trying the best they can. So one of my argument about street work, okay, we're in street prostitution, the one that seems to bother everybody. All I was trying to say, decriminalize, allow people to stop running, allow people to meet with street workers, allow people to take the time to think, to regroup, to build self-worth or self-esteem. By being criminalized, you force everybody to go underground, to go and work in places they should never work out of.
The criminalization of prostitution in Canada can be seen as like a state violence, right? Where it creates conditions of work that are poor, and then people get exploited. Mm-hmm. And if those conditions weren't there, like if that wasn't criminalized, women probably wouldn't experience as much violence or bad working conditions, we could even say.
Laws, of course, do not operate entirely separate from public opinion, nor are they self-operating. Laws are made meaningful both by the legitimacy ascribed to them by the public and their enforcement by police officers. Indeed, the criminalization of sex work can be seen as giving a mandate to both citizens and cops to mistreat the sex workers in their communities. I asked Lainey how exactly the application both of criminalization laws and the enforcement of the ideas they represent by citizens and police officers affect sex workers of all kinds.
It seems like in Canada there's this double talk of a kind of abolitionist stance where we want to eliminate prostitution because we think it's wrong. So we have these laws that criminalize activities surrounding prostitution. But really, we crack down on it at those places where it might bother us by its visibility. So it's relatively, although you're still vulnerable to arrest, it's still doable to organize an indoor work, escort service or any sort of a massage parlor or something. Invisible prostitution, where it doesn't come in conflict or contact with public morality or order, then it's doable, but you still aren't recognized as a worker, so you don't have all the benefits of being able to unionize in order to ensure, you know, decent conditions. And it's, of course, it's harder to denounce a crime, to denounce violence as a sex worker, because you're considered less credible, because it's not a legal profession per se, because some people might assume it's part and parcel of the job. Mm-hmm. And then for those people who are working in a way that really does actively, directly confront, you know, public order, public morality, they're visible, they're in the streets, or whatever, then they're constantly harassed. They're constantly harassed by people around them, by the cops, by the media, by whoever is fascinated by street prostitutes and want to, you know, expose them, and those who want to get rid of them and make them invisible. So that makes it all the harder for people to organize themselves, to work in safe and visible ways, to negotiate with a client, to even, you know, work at organizing their lives a little better if they're having problems generally, because they're constantly being chased around or thrown in jail.
In Montreal, maybe you could speak a little bit about what generally is the relationship between the cops and the sex workers. Are the cops sort of on the sex workers' backs all the time? Is there sort of a informal agreement?
Well, as I said before, the cops are going to be on the backs of the people who are seen as the most confrontational for public order or public morality. Okay. So street prostitutes or whatever. They're always able to crack down on escort agencies or massage parlors, and they do when it's convenient for them, if they get a complaint or for whatever reason, to gain political points or I don't know what. But actively, they're cracking down on street prostitution. And the relationship between the cops and the women in the streets is not clear-cut, you know? Sometimes the cops will be friendly with the women in order to maintain some order or to get some information from them. They're always in the same area, so they tend to know each other. But generally, the mandate is, you know, that they're there to get these women off the streets, to control them. And not just to get them off the streets, but specifically to control them. So to always identify them and to let them know that they know who they are, you know, and to follow them around, to ask them questions, to be intrusive in ways that most people don't have to deal with, you know. So it is a question of asserting control in the streets. Yeah. That's a problem on one level, and then on another level, you've got the tickets, you know, that the women have to run around. And I've heard that Montreal is particularly bad for having to hide from the cops, whereas in other cities, the cops are a little bit more helpful or friendly, apparently, although these are just anecdotes that I've heard. Mm-hmm. But where specifically Montreal, you know, constantly have to run around in order to be, you know, out of sight and out of the way. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, actually arresting them, throwing them to jail, and sending moral messages that go way beyond their mandate. You know, like, for example, a cop saying to a guy who was caught talking to a girl on the street, you know, you shouldn't be talking to her, get yourself some better friends or something, you know, or a cop saying to a girl, now you're going to pay for all the bad things you've done, you know, as he puts her in jail. And just their job oughtn't be to be a moral authority in these issues. It's to apply the law, but because the law is so entwined with a sense of moral indignation, they become these preachers in the streets or something, but with a gun, you know.
Came in with a big Tommy gun, bang, 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 trying to stop my fun, but there's a riot going on. In the air, you don't stop this riot, you all gonna get the chair. Two gun Matilda said it's too late to quit. Pass the dynamite, Molly, 'cause man, this is a lit. There's a riot going on. Help them win the fight. Drove up to the prison in the middle of the night. Each and every trooper, he looked so tall and fine. All the chicks went crazy up in cell block number 9. Now there's a riot going on.
If you are just tuning in, this is Heating Up Radio, a look at the sex trade and its advocacy. This is episode 1 of a 4-week series exploring issues in sex work from the perspective of sex workers and their allies. Today we are talking to Lainey Bassman, Andrea Langlois, and Francine Tremblay, three women who are involved in various aspects of sex work advocacy. We are exploring issues of representation and celebration in the struggle to have sex work recognized as a legitimate and decriminalized economy and challenge the stigmas associated with the sex trade and its workers. One argument against decriminalization is that society, through their government representatives, would be condoning and legitimizing an activity that many still view as morally reprehensible. I asked Francine if this is what society would be doing and how issues of morality still affect the struggle for decriminalization of the sex trade.
Yes, and I think that takes political courage. Once in a while, I just go, what the hell am I doing? You know, I want decriminalized. I want people to see this as work. I have questions. Well, I think that we all do. People that don't, that means they did not think very long. But we all have our doubts. Of course, sometimes I wonder if I'm totally perverted or immoral. I'm far from being immoral, on the contrary. People will be surprised of how straight some sex workers are. We're just the same, no difference. But I think the argument about decriminalization is yes, will I condone something that is immoral? What is immoral about it? Is it the act of the way or the way you act? What is immoral about prostitution? Having a client entering your home or the way you do it? What is immoral? See, this is a question. When you look at street sex worker, is it immoral or just painful to watch? We better ask ourselves a question here. I have stuff that I find so totally immoral. I find totally immoral whenever we hurt someone. Drives me nuts, up the wall. Bullies, I lose it. I lose it. And I don't care who you are bullying. Man, woman, child, big guy, small guy, I don't care.
Was a little girl, I wished I was a boy. I tagged along behind the gang and wore me corduroys. Everybody said I only did it to annoy, but I was gonna be an engineer. Mama told me, can't you be a lady? Your duty is to make me the mother of a pearl. Wait until you're older, dear, and maybe you'll be glad that you're a girl. Dainty as a Dresden statue, gentle as a Jersey cow, smooth as silk, gives creamy milk. Learn to coo, learn to moo, that's what you do to be a lady now.
Issues of sexual morality have for centuries had specific applications for women, as societies have upheld paternalistic ideas about women's sexuality that legitimize the control of their bodies. Even in the 21st century, there continues to be an idea that women who are selling sex are selling not just a service, but something precious to their identities. I asked my guests how the status of sex work is related to historic and continuing discourse regarding women's sexuality.
Selling your body versus selling a service, I mean, it has to do with this, the way that we treat women's sexuality and that feminists have fought against, you know, of saying that... If you do this thing, if you sell a service for cash, there's something that you've lost that you can never get back again. You've become impure, broken, you know, because to sell something is to have something leave that you can never bring back. I think a lot of women that I've talked to don't feel that way, you know. It's not the case, whether they're sex workers or not, that sexuality isn't this one uniquely lived thing which happens in an ideal bubble, diverse or not, but only involves loving and absolutely mutual and tender relationships with one another. It can happen in a variety of ways. I guess I take issue with this idea that sex of a particular kind, you know, like is so intimate to a woman's identity that she can't just, you know, sell a service for a night without losing something that she can never regain. And we don't have the same knee-jerk attitudes about men who are working. We don't have that same, as far as I know from what I've heard, that same protectiveness over male sexuality, that if men want to have a one-night stand or sell sexual services for money or do whatever, you know, we don't feel like they've lost something that they're never going to get back.
Many people on the left, feminists included, see sex work as epitomizing the commodification of women's bodies. I asked Lainey how she felt about this view.
As women, sexuality can be seen right now as a commodity. In a society where we commodify just about everything, so let's not make a distinction about this.
Right.
And however, it takes a certain amount of guts, of smarts, of self-possession, I don't know what the word is, in order to go out and do it, especially given all the stigma and the barriers and the laws. So, you know, I find, you know, amazingly resilient and courageous people all around me all the time. It's not always... this idea of I'm doing it because I have nothing else to do or can't do anything else. It's like, I can do this. I'm going to do it.
She's smart for a woman. I wonder how she got that way. You get no choice, you get no voice. Just stay mum, pretend you're dumb. And that's how you come to be a lady today.
What is so precious with everything sexual about me? What is so precious about my cunt? What is so precious about the fact that I'm a virgin or not? You're not interested in what I think. You're not interested in what I want to do. I make babies. Okay. I understand. I can make babies. So you want babies maybe to be born out of a beautiful virgin body? Well, stop beating me maybe, or stop telling me I'm an idiot. Or I find something very annoying in this fact that sex for a woman is so kind of jewel-like. I think people are still ill at ease discussing sexual matters. I'm ill at ease around sexual matters. I don't like discussing sexual matters.
Speaks to a sense of morality?
Yeah, for a lot of people, it's wrong. Sex should go with love. Oh, they're half tolerated free love and sex without marriage. It's like we're pushing. The swingers are extremely popular. I mean, swinging clubs are all over the place. But sex work and anything that has to do with the selling, I think it's dark. It's a dark area. They don't want to go there. Simple. They don't want to go there. What's there? Everybody told us it was love, having babies, having a family, being the good mother, the good woman have babies with a man they love. Since the 60s, it's always been that way. But since the 60s, we really blew it. I mean, we really screamed it. I'm gonna have sex with whoever I want, whenever I want, and on top, you know what? You're gonna pay for it.
Violence within the sex industry continues to receive the bulk of media attention when it comes to sex work, and many see the trade as a dangerous arena into which women are coerced and trapped. Indeed, it is by portraying sex workers as victims without choice or agency, forced into work that is inherently exploitive, that most public sympathy gets invoked. Sex worker activists, however, will often say that the violence within the trade receives unrepresentative attention and itself is confused by misinformation and stereotyping. Many advocates seek in their own work to shift the focus of debate to what they view as more relevant and useful issues.
Again, just in regards to common public perceptions, there's this idea that, among some people anyways, that the work is inherently exploitive. And if that's not true, when is it exploitive? Are there cases?
I think it's exploitive in the ways that work is exploitive, where you're coerced and you're not seeing the profits of your work, where there's the conditions aren't suitable to what you need, mm-hmm. where you're not given certain social benefits. Mm-hmm. It's exploitive in the way that violence is exploitive, when you're being, kicked around, beat up, or you know, systemic violence, institutional violence, when you're being thrown around by the cops, or you're being taken advantage of by the cops or by clients because of your vulnerable status, marginal or illegal status. So it's exploitative in those broad ways. And I see the exploitation personally in those terms and not in terms of the act itself, which can be done in better or worse circumstances, you know?
Violence is a reality in many women's lives. It is a reality in many sex workers' lives. But if the focus is always put on the violence and on the bad conditions and recounting that in detail, then it gets co-opted, it gets sensationalized, and I don't think things necessarily move further. I think, of course, violence is an issue that has to be talked about because that's why we're also seeking to improve working conditions. But I think other things need to be talked about too, like organizing, unionizing, seeing it as work. You know, some of these things, if you always put violence on the top rung because it sometimes feels like the most immediate, the most intense issue to deal with, I think that it takes over, and it takes over in the media. We see that definitely. Probably, I think it was probably 98-ish, there was quite a few women arrested in Toronto that had been trafficked, quote-unquote, into Canada, and there was the whole debate around, were they pure victims or not? And this is like a huge media frame.
What does that mean?
Did they know that they were going to be doing prostitution?
Oh.
So if they knew that they were going to be doing prostitution when they came, then we don't see them as the pure victim. We have less, the public in general, the media in general has less sympathy for them.
Mm.
If they are the pure victim and they were just, ripped out of their home and like didn't know at all what was going to happen to them, which is sometimes the case, but often women do know what they're going to be doing, and it shouldn't matter, but it's this whole pure victim. And I think we see that all the time around sex work in the media. We have this like victim versus deviant frame.
I asked Andrea whether or not sex worker advocates are actually succeeding in shifting the focus of the debates, and if so, how.
I think the issues have changed. And I think some of the debates are shifting a little bit. I think the debates around trafficking are becoming more more looked at as issues of migration, which I find very interesting. I think that some of the debates are still there, and I think the struggles are still there to just have sex work viewed as work. I think that's central. And then also the elimination of the whore stigma, the stigma of what the whore is. And I think that's something that affects all women, not just sex mm-hmm. workers. I see that people are working really hard, and it's hard to know where to go sometimes and what it's going to take to have decriminalization happen or to have working conditions happen or have public attitudes change. I think it's a constant struggle. The Sex Workers Festival in Montreal, I think, is a wonderful step towards something. It gets sex workers visible. It's like gays and lesbians outing themselves as a way of showing people how, that they're just people. I think sex workers being visible as something other than a murder victim,
mm-hmm.
It's a victim of violence. So people that are strong, that have choice, mm-hmm. that speak very eloquently, I think it's really important, and I think the festival has shown that very much.
At the end of the day, is sex work a means of income people actually choose for themselves? And is it even relevant or constructive to ask this question?
What is choice? What is autonomy? What
right.
is... What is the larger movement? There are feminists who believe that, that if any woman says that she's chosen this, then she's doing violence to all women by saying that. It's a very slippery and deep place. And I think there's other people, there's people that are finding ways to get away from this, away from the discussions on choice and put the emphasis in other places. I think we all have limited choices. I think all poor people, not just sex workers. I think it can't take over. We can't start arguing about choice and autonomy, because does the McDonald's employee who pays $7 an hour, do they have a choice? It's just too slippery.
Mm-hmm.
What about, there's some people, like Gail Peterson, who writes about looking at wives. A lot of wives in our society, they could be considered sex workers. Do they have a choice to screw their husband or cook him dinner? It's just a very slippery slope. I think we need to focus more on work conditions and helping alleviate poverty and oppression of all types.
It complicates an argument that should be separate. Large part of what we need to do right now is not if they have the choice or not the choice, is to do something to make everybody secure. That should be number one priority for everybody. Do I like it? It's really not important. What's important is that people are kept safe as much as possible. Are people will die? Yes. Are we going to lose girls on the street? Yes. But can we do something to open doors, lighten up, and make things better? We have the power to do that.
We're marching in the streets. We're marching in the streets.
Marching in the streets.
We want negotiations, not confrontations, a chance for all to it doesn't matter who they are, they can't push us too far.
Many sex workers have realized their own power to make change and are continuing the struggle for rights and dignity. As the festival indicated, this first entails defining and vocalizing themselves what the key issues and priorities are.
Where do you think changing the conditions starts then? Is it at the level of policies about decriminalization, or is it changing public consciousness?
I think it has to work on a few levels. Change the laws so that we can be more frank about how we can organize our work, less hypocritical about the kinds of things we have to do to run around the law, and to stop being thrown in jail, to stop being given tickets, to stop being pushed outside. of society, on the one hand. Secondly, we have to, or simultaneously, the stigma associated with prostitution. We have to get out of the heads of people that prostitutes can't be raped, that they can't be beaten without repercussions, that they can't be disrespected, that they have equal access, equal rights to all sorts of social services and social benefits, that they're a member of the community, that they're good neighbors, that they're mothers, that, you know, really work on the stigma associated with sex work, and then work on the poverty, the disparity, the general levels of violence in society, things that might push anyone to be in situations where they have less choice about how they're going to live their lives with autonomy. What we want to say is that no one's saying that these things are, that life is great right now, and we're all happy hookers running around, you know, like throwing our bras into the wind, you know, but that we can play a role in transforming the conditions.
Yeah.
That we have a part to play, just like marriage was transformed, just like civic rights were transformed for women. Well, so sex work can be transformed as well, and that we can remain sex workers and denounce violence.
Can the struggle of sex workers to better their living and working conditions be separated from the struggle of most marginalized groups in Canadian society to eradicate systematic oppressions?
In Vancouver, in BC in particular, since Gordon Campbell has gotten into power, he has cut welfare, he has cut disability pensions, mostly for women, and anecdotal evidence or whatever says the amount of sex work in Surrey has increased. There's a lot more street workers,
right.
Which I think is indicative of the fact that social services and social funding is being cut. So these things are linked to government policies,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
So with the downtown east side, yeah, no, things aren't going to get much better if social services keep getting cut, if people don't have places to live, you know.
Self-representation is essential to the fight for self-determination, and many sex worker organizers recognize the imperative role the tools of media and communication play.
Yeah, maybe you could talk a little bit about examples of the sex worker community and their allies, like, taking on these tools, taking on these media tools, and representing themselves.
Specific examples would be actually that every sex worker organization that I know in Canada has their own publication, right? So that's,
wow.
You know, they see it important to get their own stories out there, you know? I think understanding mainstream media and the way it typically covers things helps people like the coalition in doing press conferences where you have an idea of what you want, what kind of message you want to get out there. But unfortunately, you can't have a press conference every time something happens around sex work in Montreal, and you're not always going to be quoted. You know, there's certain people that get quoted all the time, academics, police, you know, the angry neighbor. You know, I believe it's really important for grassroots groups to know how to write a press release, know how to conduct this kind of things, know how to speak, but also if you have the energy to be able to do things like this, that, yeah, this might be the only time this year that we talk about sex workers in a newspaper instead of hookers, or struggles for the rights of sex workers, like this is some of the stuff coming out of this Gazette article here. It might be the one time a year, but you never know, it might be picked up and looped, you know, maybe next time John or someone else writes an article about prostitution, they'll use the word sex work. So there's that. I think there's creating your own media. But I think alternative media need to engage in this issue a bit more. I think other social movements need to engage in it a bit more. It's about talking about this in a different light and trying to actually find the cracks in the system almost and subvert it a little bit and get those alternative messages out there. And that's why I care about media, because I think that media, it produces and reproduces certain ideologies, certain frameworks of thinking about, say, sex work.
Yeah.
And the more we can get different points of view in there, I think the better, because I think the media is an important way to change public perception on things.
So I wanted to ask you how you think non-sex workers can act and non-sex worker groups can act in solidarity with sex workers, and what acting in solidarity means as opposed to, like, acting charitably and ending up doing more harm than good.
I think it involves a lot of listening, because I think sex workers have been organizing and talking for, you know, decades, have fairly consistent demands all around the world. You know, during the Festival of the Coalition, we had this love letter on Thursday whose message was, you know, we support you. We stand with you against, you know, hatred, hypocrisy, and incarceration. We support you in your struggle for your rights. We send you all our love, etc. And no one was asking them to do anything more than say, we hear you and we support you. You know, it might not be our cause, but we support you in yours. And, you know, work together for more general demands. But listen to sex workers. And to all sorts of sex workers, because one of the accusations Mira brought against the feminist movement is that they only listen to the sex workers that say the kinds of things that they want to hear, which is that I was abused and I was victimized and thank you, you saved me. And that's a legitimate thing to say. There's no one's contesting that. But every time anyone says anything that says anything different, I don't want you to save me. I want rights. I want recognition. I want to be able to do this job with a little bit more safety and dignity. Then they're considered to be victims of false consciousness who don't realize their own victimization and need help all the more. You know, it's a terrible corner that they push sex workers into.
A lot of terrorists are worrying that everybody wants to be recognized. Okay, so meaning, like, everybody has little battles everywhere. So the individual battle is sex workers, gays and lesbians and color people, black people, yellow people, Indian, everybody's coming with their little demands. But what is universal is the desire to be recognized as someone. Our individuality is our identity, according to Charles Taylor, okay, who's a philosopher. Identity is made every day through what you think, how you debate, and the choice you make. Identity is not if you're a woman, a man, a doctor. I don't care who you are. I'm really not impressed with who you are. What I'm totally impressed with people today is to see effort put in their thinking. That impressed me. I think someone like the coalition organizing something like that, they do it for themselves and it comes out. What I do for me, I do for you. I cannot separate the individual from society. It's impossible for me.
Mm-hmm. What do you think it is that moves people to move beyond just their individual survival to organizing more broadly?
They live through it. They become through it. They become through that action. They write themselves. What I want to say is I wish that on that issue, we will accept to be so uncomfortable for a while. Let's be uncomfortable. Let's be totally messed up. But let's move. Let's do something. You don't own me. Don't try to change me in any way. You don't own me. Don't tie me down, 'cause I'll never stay. Oh, I don't tell you what to say, and I don't tell you what to do. So just let me be myself.
You have been listening to Heating Up Radio, a look at the sex trade and its advocacy. This has been Episode 1, Sex Work, Representation, Media, and Celebration. Next week, we speak to Jen Clayman from the International Union of Sex Workers and Libby Davies, NDP Member of Parliament from East Vancouver, about issues of decriminalization, legal reform, and unionizing. I'd like to thank my guests today, Lainey Bassman, Francine Tremblay, and Andrea Langlois, as well as the news coordinator here at CKUT, Gretchen King. My name is Brett Story, and I will be with you for the next 4 weeks, so stay tuned every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. as we continue to explore issues surrounding the sex trade and sex worker struggle.